Welcome to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. I'm Joe Staub here with my beautiful co-host, Matt Powell. What's up, Matt?
Not much, man. Not much. Don't steal my intro, bro. That's what I was going to do.
Well, hey, man. I mean, if you use it on me, I got to use it on you at least once. So tonight's guest, Stan the Rhino Efferding. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, that's all you need to say, man. This is a guy who set powerlifting records. He's held bodybuilding titles at the highest level. He's coached some of the biggest people in the world, both physically and actually from a competition standpoint as well. So, I mean, I'm super excited to have everybody listening to this episode. Stan's the man.
No, Stan is the man. And he's things people don't know. Because again, you see people like this, Stan's a huge name. And, you know, you think he's kind of hard to get to and, you know, he won't give you time. Stan is the humblest guy. And from the first day I met him in person, took the time to talk shop, always available, always, you know, texts back, calls back, emails back. So there's not enough good things I can say about Stan as just a genuine human being trying to help other people. In addition to the fact that he has multiple streams of business, multiple different avenues of revenue, is all over, was, you know, all over social media before social media was a thing, really. And is now branching into kind of diversifying his portfolio. And he even mentions going into doing a vertical kids. So looking at the vertical diet for children versus the vertical diet from a performance standpoint.
Yeah, a guy who's really just a master of so many trades. He has done a fantastic job of branding himself, growing himself. And he goes through so many extremely useful tips for not just the people at a higher level, but those just starting, how to start a general file on your computer, how to have programs, documents, et cetera, ready to go to look professional and be good at not only your day job, right, your W-2, whatever you're doing right now, but also to make your side hustle better so you can be better at that long-term and grow that extra income the way he has on so many different levels, from products to training to all the different information education he puts out there.
No, agreed. So this is an awesome one. And for anyone, if you're just joining us now, this is episode one. You know, always go back and listen to episode zero. If it's your first time ever hearing anything, it'll kind of set the stage for, you know, this episode and all future episodes. So without further ado, episode one, Stan Efferding.
What's up, gentlemen?
Hey. Sir, how are you doing today?
Good, man. Good.
I appreciate you taking some time. I know you've talked to Matt, but you've never actually met Matt in person or anything, right?
Right.
So that's the beautiful Matt Powell.
Awesome.
Nice to meet you, brother.
Good to meet you, man.
So, thanks for taking some time. First off, how are you doing? How's you? How's the family? I mean, before we get into anything, just what's the word, man?
Oh, we're great. You know, we work from home and I have a gym in my garage, so I wasn't all that affected, to be honest, except that trip I took kind of got a little hairy when they started to shut things back down. But everything's been great here. Kids are homeschooling and I just work off the internet, so I'm blessed.
No, nice, nice. Yeah, no, I'm in a much similar boat to you. I mean, even when I do get out of the house, I mean, everything's in town. Where I got to go if I have to go into an office is 10 minutes from me. I mean, it's kind of, I'm in my own little world when I go there. Same thing, garage, gym, and whatnot. So it's as crazy as it's been, it hasn't been too bad.
I agree. Not for us.
Yeah. Nice. All right. So like I had mentioned to you, big picture, Matt and I have known each other a long time. So we actually, I was an intern for Matt when Matt was a grad assistant at UConn. And then I ended up staying at UConn and working with Dr. Kramer and the whole bit. So me and Matt have known each other for shit, what now, pal, 15 years?
About 15, yeah.
Yeah. So we go back a long ways and we've always had that similar mindset of not just coach, but be a little bit entrepreneurial, have the side project, have the side hustle, and then also balance that with family. You know, Matt's got a daughter, I got two kids, you know, we've both got little kids. So it was kind of that combination of who are people like us who love coaching, love helping other people and use strength and conditioning, performance, fitness, nutrition. And then on the other end, balance that somehow, whether we did it well or not, with family life and being around and all that. So Matt had the idea to kind of take those two ideas and say, look, we can make content. We know good people who people want to hear from, and we can create kind of not the how-to guide, but kind of the field manual and say, look, if you're going to have a side hustle or, you know, some type of outside business, how do you go about it? What are the goods, the bads? What did you learn from coaching? What did you learn to coach with from doing it? And then also, how did you go about, you know, your family life? And again, whether that's a good, bad, sad, or ugly, because everyone's got a story to tell with that balance of, you know, you put the work in to hustle, but then you also have to do the other stuff. And it's always this, it's never perfect.
Right, right.
So that's where we're at. By the way, Matt, outside of being a strength coach, just got his RD the other day. So congratulations. I forgot. I don't think I actually said congrats to you, buddy. Yet.
Well, I appreciate it. That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's been a process for sure. Just like Joe was talking about, those late nights for sure. You know, you could get done with work, you get off work. You know, my kid was real small at the time. So I'd literally wake up and feed her at midnight or 1 a.m., finish my schoolwork at 2 or 3, wake up at 5:30 or 6 and go do the whole thing all over again. So a lot of late nights, about 3 years there, but just glad to be done for sure.
Good for you, man. That's a hustle. I tell you what, that's a lot of work.
I appreciate it, man. I'm trying to be like you, you know, like seeing what you've done with the vertical diet and seeing what you've done with the books and your ability to kind of put it all together. It just, you know, it's so inspiring to see people like yourself who can take that and create multiple layers of a business. And that's definitely something I wanted to ask you about, was just when you were writing that book and when you were going through it and testing it out with, you know, all the different awesome people you have on that, you know, from the strongman people, the powerlifters, the bodybuilders, did you know at that time that you were going to have all those different layers? Like at that time, were you already thinking, hey, how can I have meal plans already sent to people and have that whole system?
I didn't. Actually, a lot of what I learned was from my own experience, having competed and worked with great coaches and athletes for many, many years. And then I didn't really start training people, I guess you would say online, till about 10 years ago. Prior to that, I'd always been kind of an in-person ever since college. You know, I worked at gyms, I owned a gym, and I trained people hands-on. And then when the internet started to get a little more popular, social media, the industry as a whole, I started training more and more people that reached out to me from afar. And I wanted to send them everything they needed to get started. And for me, that wasn't just a workout program or a diet. It was sleep, hydration, nutrition, compliance, digestion, you know, and every single question somebody asked me, I wrote down the question and the answer, and I included that in the next client's package of things that I wanted them to pay attention to, because I knew these were common questions. And to be honest, the vertical diet started on my notepad on my iPhone. I just started adding more and more things to it. When I saw a really good article or a video or learned something that I thought was relevant, I added it to that particular section, whether it was on sleep or hydration or digestion and all those things. I would just start putting little tidbits of information that they might be interested in referencing when I send them the document. Also, because as you know, when you give people information, they have to bounce that up against every amateur authority figure that they've ever come across.
The gurus, man, the gurus.
There's no shortage. I feel like half of what I do is have to prove to them that this is, you know, I call it a good, better, best scenario. I have to be cautious about crapping on anybody else's suggestion. I set things up in that and say, hey, this is probably optimal if you can achieve that. And obviously there's some things that are just plain wrong, but a lot of the information that I send to support my recommendations is simply to give them confidence, because, you know, even that can be, you know, the placebo effect can be pretty compelling. If people just believe in what you tell them, they're much more likely to comply with it and get better results long term. So that's where all the references and videos probably came from. And then the little, kind of the little pro tips, things that I learned, just little stuff like getting a thermos or putting a little bit of dextrose on your rice or using a low FODMAP menu, or, you know, just little things that make your life easier. I popped in there and they seemed to resonate with a lot of my clients. So I built that form on the notepad, and it turned out to be a very lengthy notepad after a while before I put it into a PDF and then ultimately Now it's in a user, it's in a username password access, because then I can update it real time. If anything significant is new, I can pop it in there. So every subsequent client can get all the latest information that I have to offer. And that gives them probably 99% of what they need. And then I do a questionnaire, and it allows me to pick at their specific goals and needs and current circumstances, and allows me to kind of fine tune it.
Stan, you just unloaded so many gems right there.
There's so much in there.
I know I asked you a big question, so that's definitely part of my fault. But man, you just unloaded so many things that people struggle with, from, you know, every aspect of their business to their coaching to everything. Your ability to take and create a general file off of what you were doing with, you know, one or two or three clients led you being so successful with now what's, I'm imagining, probably hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people now who have obviously read the Vertical Diet, implemented it, used you as a resource, and you've been able to update real time. That is top drawer right there. That is something that, you know, most coaches can't do. And that's extremely impressive that you continue to kind of, you know, add on to something that's already a well-known quantity and product for sure. So I think if we back up a little bit, when you had that note on that, you know, iPhone, you said, or iPad, when you were going through, did you create little snippets so that you could just copy and paste as you were talking to different clients on via email, et cetera? Is that something you already had set up? Your general file can become so important. Did you do that? And if you did, what were some of the most important ones you set up?
100%. Yep, that's exactly what I did. Obviously, under sleep, I included good sleep hygiene, video references to Dr. Matthew Walker. And I would, if I sent them a YouTube video where he did a really good presentation, I would also take the bullet points out of it, just in case they didn't want to take the time to watch the 12 or 20 or 40 minute video. And I would give them the step by step. I do that with a lot of Chris Masterjohn stuff. Anybody who reads through my ebook will see me reference many, many, I think, highly regarded academic professionals, as well as coaches, and their information. And I'll push people that direction. I've spent a lot of time over the last many years working with numerous different coaches, attending lots of seminars. Mark Ripito's Starting Strength Seminar, Barbell Medicines Seminar with Jordan Fagenbaum and Austin Baraki, a lot of stuff from Alan Aragon, stuff from Mass Research Review with Greg Knuckles, all the stuff that Brad Schoenfeld does, and read and reference his books on hypertrophy, and Brett Contreras. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I'll find really good, those guys tend to be able to condense things down pretty well too. And I'll find good information from them and reference it in the ebook or on the notes that I send people. And then you're right. I have like a notepad for sleep, and I have a notepad for digestion, say low FODMAP stuff. And I have a separate note for things like hydration, sodium in particular. I even have to start setting up a separate note for when people ask me about the game changers and vegan diets. And I have a chapter in the ebook on vegan and vegetarian diets, and I train vegan clients up to and including competition for bodybuilding and figure and bikini. So, but people ask me those kinds of questions, and you're right, I can just go copy and paste, and it could be things like injury rehab, you know, back pain, a lot of stuff that Dr. Stuart McGill puts out, and try and give them, you know, kind of a big rocks. Here's the step-by-step kind of in order, a hierarchy of what's most important, and down the list, and supplements, and specific individual supplements and general information, cholesterol. I get a lot of questions about that. Blood testing. I get a lot of questions about that. Blood pressure, blood sugars. So I create checklists, what I call quick fix kits, for people to implement. It's always multifactorial. It's never one magic thing, and it's rarely a pill, powder, or potion. And
you just can't go to GNC. You just can't just go buy it off the shelf.
I'm sorry. No, that's that's not my protocol. I've said in my rants, you've heard me say, things that are done to you or for you are rarely as effective as things you do for yourself. So much to the chagrin of people who reach out to me, most of the recommendations I make for rehab, for blood pressure, for blood sugar, is just requires them to be more disciplined and more consistent and move more and be more responsible and stop eating like an asshole and getting a CPAP and, you know, sleeping better. And I'm telling the guy who sleeps 2 hours a night to get his RD. But that's kind of my long-winded answer. That's exactly what I do. And I have received over 50,000 DMs in the last 2 years from people all over the world on my Instagram. And I've responded to better than 90% of them in that fashion. I copy and paste research that I've already done previously because these people tend to ask a lot of the same questions. Mm-hmm. I learn from them, from the types of questions they ask, which questions are most prevalent. And so I answer those as best I can in my ebook. And I also, I get good feedback from them on whether or not what I told them is working. And that kind of helps me refine what kind of advice to give or to maybe give them some nuance if I had an experience with an individual who might have had a similar question and got a good result. But that's when you kind of get down into the weeds. It can be individualistic, and that can be a little more painstaking if they have a specific issue that needs addressed. But in general terms, that's kind of the way I've handled it. Copy and paste and give them a short answer. And I probably spend at least an hour, if not two a day, blasting through DMs and trying to respond to people, whether or not I don't even know if they're a customer of the Vertical Diet ebook or not. I don't know if they purchased anything from me. I don't care. I get a lot of good feedback from people when I respond, and at least if just briefly, at least I address their concern.
That's awesome.
Again, like, that's a huge answer with so many things in it. That's awesome. I'll just make a comment. The fact, and again, one of the reasons why, you know, talking to you a couple times, meeting you at NSCA that day, you know, you were in the middle of eating lunch, and I came over because I had just talked to Scott Caulfield, and he said to come introduce myself and say hi. And, you know, you're in the middle of eating lunch. Plenty of people could say, hey, I'm busy, you leave me alone. You stopped eating and talked to me for 20 minutes just to shoot the stuff. So I think
I had my thermos.
Exactly. I think for me, one of the big things you just hit on is listening, not only listening to people who are your customers or you're trying to sell to, but just listening to the audience, what's important, why is it common, and then you're addressing that. That just from a business standpoint, like, you're taking the feedback and acting on it. You know, it's just, it's gold. It's stuff that people don't always do because they always think they have the answer. My question for you, kind of leading into all this, is at what point, right? So you're obviously well-known through bodybuilding and powerlifting, you're well known there. Then you start to grow your circle. More people start paying attention to the things you're talking about because you not only have this tremendous experience under the bar and in the gym, but you're also, like you said, you're learning, you're pushing people in the directions you found good answers to, and you're listening. At what point did you realize it was a business? Because, you know, giving someone an answer or someone comes up and says, hey, Stan, what do you think? And you can say, yeah, you know, hey, Here's this. This is what I've seen. When did you start realizing that, one, you were being asked so much it had to become a business? And two, how did you convert that into a dollar? What was your method to say, hey, at this point, I can actually make money by being an expert and, you know, helping people?
Yeah, I did a video about my competing. It was called Why I'm a Hypocrite. And I talked about the fact that when I trained with Flex Wheeler, I had, you know, I didn't have a mortgage or a job to worry about. I just full time ate, slept, and trained. And so I was sleeping 9 hours a night, napping every afternoon, and training twice a day, and eating eight times a day, and living across the street from the gym. And you know, money wasn't an issue. So I'm going to say something similar here with respect to how I kind of stumbled into this, and that's all of the, I don't want to call it success, but just the publicity that I received, much by chance, from having earned my pro card and set a world record in powerlifting, and then working closely with Flex Wheeler. So I had a relationship with the people from Flex Magazine and Muscular Development, and they covered they gave me 10-page spreads and had me write for them. And then Mark Bell started publishing tons and tons of content. At the time, it was kind of fresh back in 2009, 2010. Facebook and YouTube was just starting to build. I've kind of been really fortunate in the fact that my social media presence and my marketing was kind of done a little bit for me while I just competed and showed up and did some videos. I'm cautious to tell people that internet or online training is lucrative because I didn't build it from nothing. I had a lot of momentum behind me, and people all over the world were familiar with my name. A lot of that was just, some of it was luck. Some of it was, obviously I worked hard, but there's lots of IFBB pro bodybuilders and powerlifters who have no following, very little. And haven't been in the magazines and don't have millions of views on social media. So I'm really hesitant to try and tell people to do online training or that it's going to be easy. I should say that. Now, when I started training people, I trained them in person ever since back in the late 80s when I was in college, 87, 88, 89, and all through the whole time I was working side jobs. Actually, training was a side job. I had to get a full-time job to support myself. I was never able to support myself completely on personal training. It wasn't until more recently that, and having traveled around the world and been to hundreds, if not 1,000 or more gyms and met gym owners and seeing the successful gyms and gym owners and trainers, that I started to see some are more successful than others. I see a lot of gyms fail. I see a lot of trainers that just can't support themselves full time. It's their side gig. So we actually wrote an ebook. My vertical trainer, I partnered with a gentleman out of Cincinnati by the name of Matt Whittemer, who owns Beats Personal Training or Beat Personal Training. And he was a strength and conditioning coach for an NFL team, the Browns, and then some collegiate teams. And he started doing personal training full time, and he was really good at it, very successful. His gym's successful, his trainers are successful, and his clients are successful. And there's a few things, I'll give you the meat of it right now. If you want to become a personal trainer, and then I think first and foremost, you should try and do it out of a gym, touching clients. I think the online training can be a little discouraging. I don't think that the clients are as easy to get. I don't think they're with you as long. It can be a challenging road. I think people oversell. They glamorize that. And I don't think you build as good of a relationship with your client. And I don't think that that it's a very long-term relationship. So here's the big rocks. One, we set up recurring monthly billing. If you have to ask for a check every month, or if they have to show up to pay you, you're much less likely to get paid. Same as, that's why they do auto debit at gyms. And only 10% of their clients actually come to the gym, but the other 90% get auto debited. But with the auto payment, you're much more likely to get recurring payments. Two, you need to train more than one client at a time. If you limit yourself to trading time for money, training one client per hour, you're going to have to charge a lot more. And that's going to dramatically decrease your potential customer base and the length of time at which they can stay with you. So what Matt does is he has his trainers, he teaches them to train more than one client at a time. And that doesn't mean they train together on the same exercise. They're monitoring the gym and working with clients. They do it very successfully and they pay close attention to them. And a 60-year-old woman can train at the same time as an 18-year-old high school football player, and the same coach can train both with a completely different program. This isn't group training or whatever you call those, the training a lot of people do where they bring, everybody comes in every hour and does a boot camp or something. That's not what it is. This is personal, individualistic training, but the coach can manage more than one at a time. That way the client can pay less, probably around $25 an hour. But the trainer can train three or four clients at a time and now can make $75 or $100 an hour. That's a career. You can own a home, get married, have kids, put them through college, making $80,000, $100,000 a year as a personal trainer. because you're making about $100 an hour while you train. That's a very reasonable. Matt's trainers, most of them do about that kind, between $80,000 and $120,000 a year. His beginning trainers, within just a few, within just a month or two, will do $40,000. And within 3 months, are usually up to $60,000 plus, or he thinks they're just not a very effective trainer. But he does a lot. And so that's two. Three is a lot of personal interaction. They text their clients. You know, it's a lot of personal one-on-one hand-holding, talking, you know, just getting them to comply. We know that that's the huge hurdle. A lot of his trainers have clients that have been with them for years. He has a board on the wall, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. It's extraordinary, the relationship they have with their clients. I think it's called personal training for a reason. And we know that clinicians and dietitians don't have very good long-term success rates because they don't spend enough time with their client. They're expensive, you know, and they don't interact with them frequently enough. So you want to see a client two or three times a week and get them to understand that this is, you know, you don't, it's not just a means to an end. You have to continue to take care of yourself. Some clients will go off and come back on over time, but generally speaking, if you can make it affordable enough for them, around $300, $200, $300 a month, they can train 12 to 16 times a month with you for that. They don't even have to come in at a specific time. You're there during a block of hours. They can stop in whenever they want and you can manage them. Coordinating a specific time and then the time changes and rescheduling and, you know, that kind of thing is definitely difficult to manage as a trainer, particularly if you only allow one client for a given hour. Then they got to reschedule according to your availability. Whereas they could just be a half hour late, or they could be 2 hours late, or they could just come tomorrow. And because you're going to be there anyhow, you can manage whoever comes in. The one piece there is you have to be practiced, experienced, and good at managing more than one client at a time. I hope I hit the big rocks there and didn't spend too much time on it, but it's really important to me that trainers understand that this can be a career if they invest in it, but you have to set yourself up to be successful with those, I think, particular, that framework, so that you can obtain clients. The last piece is, which is really the first piece, is that you really need to market. You need to continuously solicit clients, ask for referrals, knock on doors, hand out cards. You need to, people have a hard time asking. If you believe in your product, if you think you can help people, you should have no problem asking them to come in and train with you. And we put a lot of details in the book on how to do that, you know, how to set up fish bowls, how to build relationships with businesses around you, offer their office manager free training if she'll let you set up to train, you know, their clients that come in. Giving a potential client a free week or a free month. They have a really high return rate on that. Once you build a relationship with them, show them a few, show them a little progress. I mean, we all know in the industry, if you put a first timer on a deadlift, within just a few weeks, they have an incredible improvement in performance. And they're like, oh my God, my trainer's amazing. And you know, you don't teach them about neural adaptation late till later, you know, but in the meantime, they think, oh my God, I put 100 pounds on my deadlift in 30 days. And that was a free 30 days. Now they renew with you. They built a relationship. They're comfortable with you. They've made some progress. You've got them on a reasonable diet plan. It just takes a lot of, I'm going to say a lot of handholding. If you want to be a personal trainer, you have to build a relationship with people and see them frequently and contact them and text them and talk to them. And the trainers that Matt has at his gym, they end up attending weddings and graduations and getting invited to dinners because they are part of the family. Your trainer becomes part of your family if it's reasonably affordable. It's $70 an hour. Not too many people, you know, it's a very small portion of people that are going to be able to stick with you for any period of time.
So
go ahead, Jeff.
I think you hit you're just hitting these out of the park with like 50, you go 1,000 directions. This is awesome. One other thing, and me and Matt, I mean, we've talked about it, and I actually even wrote about it in my book, is I actually saved the card. When Matt left working at UConn, he gave me a card as a thank you, you know, here's as an intern, thanks for helping, here's a gift card, you know, knew the way to my heart, gave me some food money, but basically said, you know, like, that was part of the reason why we've stayed in touch and connected was because he took the time to develop me, not only as a coach, but get to know me. You know, he actually trained my wife. So he actually knows my wife and that kind of stuff. And we've both hung our hats on, especially with what he's doing and the guys he works with now, like adding, like you said, adding 100 pounds to someone's deadlift or adding 5 pounds to the bench press. It's important, especially if that's their goal. But I hang my hat on Christmas cards, wedding invitations. You know, I'm at the point now where some of my kids are having kids, and I say my kids, the people, my athletes, they're having kids, and I'm seeing, you know, and I'm getting, hey, you know, I'm a mom now, or I'm a dad now, and, you know, I knew you'd love to see my kid, and, you know, thank you for helping me, and those kind of things. So, again, the outcome of the physical side was always awesome, but getting that connection and building that relationship with someone where they believe in you and you become part of their family, their circle, you know, whatever you want to call it, is I always hung my hat on that as kind of the best thing I ever did.
It's huge. I see the internet all the time. There's these paid ads that's come down my feed, and it's some guy in a Lamborghini, or he's out on his boat and he's talking about online training and he's talking about high dollar clients. And I, you know, whatever, to each their own. I don't recommend that. That's not my focus. I don't want to train people from a boat. I just don't think it's terribly effective. And I don't want to discourage anybody from getting a Instagram or a Facebook and putting their information out there and using it as a marketing tool. And yes, you can acquire online clients. I just think there's a much easier, more consistent, more long-term way to do it that's better for both you and your client. I just think the clients become much more successful when you can engage them regularly.
Yeah, one of the other things you said there that, you know, we've also talked a lot about is that time for money. At some point, that's going to be your stopgap. At some point, that's going to be the problem you have, is that you don't have enough time for the number of people you want to work with. And that's a fantastic way to get around that. Having multiple people training like that. I know Eric Cressy up in, you know, when he was back in New England doing his system up there, he did a lot of that as well, where he had multiple athletes in there at the same time, you know, an MLB player right next to a soccer mom. So it was a wonderful thing to go in there and watch that. What are some other ways that you would recommend? And obviously with your, you know, experience, you've done this, is you kind of taken yourself out of the equation for being that stopgap. So how have you gone from time for money to more of a system that will actually create the income as you go?
Well, that's, you're going to have to maybe add some products and services to maybe some people do some t-shirts. Some people do, I do the ebook, and now another ebook, and I've got a book coming out. I think if you're a coach and you've got clients you're working with, it would behoove you to have some sort of document that you could provide them, and that, you know, could grow into obviously something that they could refer to their other clients. So yeah, beyond those people that you personally touch, you will have to try and come up with some goods and services. Obviously, I started a meal prep company. Not everybody can do that, but I collaborated with an existing provider, so I didn't have to cook the food or buy the food or the ovens or the kitchen. Or, you know, I took my menu plan into someone and had them private label it for me. My specific foods, my low FODMAP, you know, foods, and my monster mash and whatever else. And again, I was fortunate to have the social media presence and the marketing ability to turn that into a pretty successful company. But that, I think you should always be thinking about value adds that you can provide to your clients. And that's just, you know, those are just a few small things, but look at what other people are selling. I'm cautious about what I sell. I want to make sure it works. You know, that's why I haven't dove into the supplement industry. Not that there aren't a few things in there that can be of benefit, to some people, but, I just had a hard time wrapping my mind around selling most of that stuff.
How about this? What advice did you get that was bad, or who'd you think was giving you something good and it ended up trash? You know what? And again, I go back to that personal trainer reference you just made. You gave like 4 or 5 amazing gems for anyone who wants to take their thing to the next level. What are the 4 or 5 things you've heard that were absolutely wrong, or what were the things you thought were right and then realized were wrong?
Oh, goodness. In terms of business, one of the big things I've always tried to avoid is taking on a significant amount of recurring costs. such as a lease, opening up a gym without members, because that monthly payment doesn't go away. Hiring employees right out of the gate. If you start to create overhead for yourself and hope that the clients will pay for that, whatever time frame you set, multiply that by five. If you think you're going to make break even within 2 months, it'd probably take a year. And there's some great gym owners and trainers out there. Alan Thrall is a perfect example from, he used to be with Starting Strength, and now he's with Barbell Medicine. Alan does a great job, but he's talked about the fact that he almost went under a few times in the first couple of 2 or 3 years that it took him to actually build up enough income to where he could support his gym. Be cautious how much money you pull out of pocket and lay down, and how many signatures you put on the line for mortgages and employees if you don't have the revenue to support those long time. So I would discourage gym ownership right out of the gate. I've seen so many gym owners fail, mostly because they do it because they love training, but they're not great at marketing. And they just don't, they'll start up like a powerlifting gym. And that's a small clientele. It's a niche market. They don't have a lot of money. They don't buy add-ons. They don't buy a lot of personal training or meals or t-shirts or anything else from your gym. They just pay their $40 a month, and they use the hell out of your equipment 6 days a week for 3 hours a day. So that would be the big thing, is that, you know, a lot of people, I just suggest that you kind of work small, be a personal trainer for someone else for a while, pay a rent at their gym until you build up a clientele that you can move, and at least cover your costs before you expand. That's going to be a big one. Beyond that, in terms of business things, I'm trying to think of the big rocks for this, because I wouldn't get involved in anything that you're not personally handling. A lot of people want to invest in someone else, and if they don't have any skin in the game, bad place to be. If it's your money and they're not vested, they're financially, then it's really... more often than not, you're going to end up taking it over and running it yourself anyhow. And so I would absolutely make sure you're hands-on with every business opportunity that you get involved in. That's probably the two biggest ones I can think of.
So that being said, if you're a kind of a starter, somebody who's trying to either go from a profession they're in right now and kind of move over to the health fitness industry, or someone who's already in, you know, a strength coaching position or a personal trainer or dietitian or athletic trainer, and they want to create that side hustle, what would be some books, podcasts, videos? What are some of your go-tos for somebody who kind of wants to make that leap to become more self-sufficient and kind of start their own thing?
Well, you know, we wrote our book, My Vertical Trainer, and it tells people how to go out and generate income by soliciting clients. We tell them to go to the massage parlor next door or to the tanning salon or to any business. Generally speaking, as a personal trainer, the vast majority of your clients are within 5 miles of your gym. Not too many people, unless they're specialists, meaning they're athletes. And those guys typically don't pay you anything. That's something that people should learn. Everybody wants to train an NFL athlete or, you know, a big time world class star. Those guys don't pay. There's 100 people in line behind you that would train them for free. They're resume builders. You know, I charge most of the people the first month. Most of my big time athletes that I work with, the big names that people are familiar with, I'll charge them for the first month, just so we're both held accountable. Because I think that which you give for free has no perceived value. And you'll take your time and write up a program and hand it to someone. And if it's free, they probably won't read it. Or I can't tell you how many times you yourself, I'm sure, have sat down for lunch with somebody for 2 hours and told them everything they need to do with a piece of paper, and they wrote it out or whatever. And then you ask them a month later and they tell you, oh, they hired someone, or they come back to you a month later and said that they hired someone and they got worse. And they wish they'd listened to you. And you're like, well, why didn't you? And like, well, because I paid him and I wanted to get my money's worth.
So
that which is provided for free has no perceived value. So you charge them mostly for accountability, at least, and then that's for athletes. But in generally speaking, for clients, they're within about 5 miles. Every time you go to the gas station or the grocery store or restaurant, or you're hanging out at the park with your kids, have business cards available, hand them to people, invite them for a free 1 hour, 30 minute or a 1 hour seminar once a week. Try and invite as many people as you can to come to your gym or your home or the gym that you're training at and sit down and learn about, diet and exercise. Because a lot of people know very little about it. And you give them, you give them good value. Even though it's a free seminar, you give them a lot of information. Hell, I put my entire vertical diet ebook in a 2.5 hour seminar up in Iceland. It's been viewed by 6.5 million people. And my wife was concerned. She goes, why would anybody buy your ebook? You just told them everything they need to know in a seminar on YouTube for free. And as it turns out, we sold thousands and thousands more ebooks as a result of that. So don't be afraid to give people lots of information. What you find is they'll discover they know much less than they think, and they need your help, and they need things to be spelled out and documented and step by step. They need an instruction manual. And so set up a seminar once a week, engage a lot of different people. And I mentioned, ask, business owners or office managers to, offer them free training if they'll let you put up a fishbowl and hand out your cards to people. And then at least then you're getting people to come, you give them information. And if they're not going to follow up with you, they might refer somebody who might be more interested. But there is no shortage of clients out there. That people get on Instagram and they think, how am I going to compete? Everybody's a personal trainer. Their personal trainers are everywhere. You go to the gym and there's 40 business cards hanging on the wall of personal trainers. Well, guess what? There's 300 million people in this country, and about 70% of them are overweight. And the rest of them probably still are having problem with sleep or digestion or, want to improve performance to some degree. There's no shortage of clients out there. There's a lot of people that need help. I don't think it would be very hard if you actually go out and talk to people and touch them to build up a client base. But most people don't solicit. They don't ask for the sale. That's a very key component, is being willing and brave enough, I guess, to ask for the sale.
Well, I think you hit on a big thing too, is everyone wants that big name, sexy all-star client, whether it's an athlete or, the strongest person in the gym. They don't want to work with, more than not, it's the everyday person who needs the most help. And there's a lot of everyday people who want help. So if you're, if you're done chasing, like you said, chasing the big names who don't pay, they're just resume builders, there's plenty of people who will pay if you're willing.
Yeah, and then they say, well, I can't afford personal training. Well, hey, pull up your credit card statement. Let's see how much you spent on restaurants this week, because I can save you that money. Yeah. And that's probably 90% of your problem to begin with. The reason why you're not losing weight. You get Subway, McDonald's, Carl's Jr., pizza, you name it.
But it goes back to what you were saying with habits and a little bit of education, doing the right small things. And again, that's a great thing, I think, especially for listeners who can't connect those dots yet. If you're out there trying to hustle and you're struggling just in your general personal training, coaching business, that's a great way to talk to someone. Hey, look, if we work on the consistency, if we work on this, we're going to change literally how you spend money, how you fuel your body, how you spend your time, and you're going to get better results and probably have pocket change after you pay my reasonable costs.
Yeah, let me throw something at that real quick in terms of compliance, because I talk about compliance as the science. I trademarked that, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah, I trademark a lot of shit that nobody cares about. But
that's a good one, though.
I like that one. Compliance is the science. So if you're a trainer and your biggest concern is getting results, what I do with all my clients, even at my supposed level of training, I make them every morning send me their hours of sleep, their morning body weight, and take a picture of each meal they eat that day. And they send me that. And it's more for their benefit than mine. They create a little checklist. Of course, I encourage them to do the 10-minute walk after each meal and then send me that on a daily basis. And then give them some tips in terms of, you know, the number one way to comply with the diet is meal prep. And so I ask, you know, my clients to prep their own meals. I have a meal prep company, but it's whether you prep or we prep, it doesn't matter. Meal prep is the number one way to comply with a diet or to lose weight. And that's where the thermos comes in, with making little frozen meals and putting them in the freezer or fridge, the Tupperware, taking them with you if you travel. When I was at the NSCA conference, it was a week long, as you recall. Yep. I rolled in there with a rolling Coleman cooler on wheels with 30 meals in it that I had checked into the airplane and brought with me. And I just stayed at a place with a microwave and a fridge. So I had all my own meals that whole week, my little frozen meals. I do that wherever I travel, whether I go to Switzerland or I spend a week in Russia or if I go to Canada. I'm always packing, at least 6 or 10 frozen meals. I wrap them in a towel and throw them in my checked luggage and take them on the plane. And then I have 2 or 3 thermos with hot meals in them in my carry-on bag, depending on the length of the trip, of the flight itself, the layover. I had to take 5 with me when I went to Russia because it was a 20-hour flight with layovers and customs on the other end. But my point being is if you are a coach, the more information you can get them to get an Oura ring and tell you their, and track their hours of sleep. That's an accountability tool that'll help them to become more successful. Maybe have them use a continuous glucose monitor if they're overweight and have some diabetes issues, some type 2 diabetes and blood sugar problems. That'll really help them hone in on which foods are causing the problem and let them see how effective the 10-minute walks are in reducing that area under the curve for glucose rise and duration and insulin right behind it. So you give them little tools, little tracking tools, even if it's just a spreadsheet, a piece of paper that has things listed in a little checkbox, and they can take a picture of that and shoot it to you via text. It really helps hold them accountable because if you just check in weekly, a lot of shit can happen in 7 days. People can completely go off the rails and then you might never hear from them again. But if you don't hear from somebody for 2 days, really easy to reel them back in. Hey, what's going on over there? Oh, I'm so sorry, this, that, and the other. If Friday morning's weigh-in looks good and then you don't hear from them over the weekend, grab them on Sunday night and say, hey, don't forget to weigh in for me tomorrow. I just want to see what damage you've done this weekend. We can get back on track. Don't worry about it. The world isn't ended. And Monday morning is usually 3 pounds heavier, and you just, you work with that. But compliance is the huge thing. And if you can get them to send you as much information as possible on a daily basis, just the tracking itself will make a huge effect in their long-term results.
Nice.
I love that. And I think obviously coming from the dietetic standpoint, that's such a huge part. What are some of the other things that you've used to analyze? I'm sure you're a big blood test guy. I know obviously we've read your book and we've seen a lot of that digestion and we've seen a lot of that FODMAPs, which I think is awesome that you're talking about that. So many people miss the boat on that one. What are some of the other major ones they'll do maybe a few times a year as opposed to the daily? Are there a few of those markers as well?
Yeah, I mean, the big ones obviously are going to be you go in order of those that have the most potential catastrophic effect. And number one would be blood pressure, probably the biggest one. And we've been really successful, and again, because it's multifactorial, we jump in there with a CPAP for people who have apnea. We get the thyroid function because it has a significant effect on blood pressure. It could be 10 to 20 points of systolic pressure. Overdosing on sodium for hypertensive people might be 2 to 5 points. It's not, in comparison to a CPAP, which might be 20 points, it's small potatoes. So blood pressure is the big one. The 10-minute walks, the weight loss, the CPAP, the thyroid correction. Sometimes that does require medical intervention. Obviously, we like to throw a little iodine at that. The sleep helps with that. Sometimes people overtrain. They get up in the morning and try and do their 40 minutes of cardio and then crush themselves in the evening in a workout. With the calorie deficit, and particularly if they reduce carbs too hard, I see that keto people tend to have a suppressed thyroid. They also have an elevated SHBG, sex hormone binding globulin, which tends to bind to their free testosterone. So then they start to have those problems along with the dehydration from the loss of glycogen along with the four parts water and then the sodium that's part of that, they tend to get that keto flu. And that's not an indictment on keto. I use that strategically as a method with high blood sugar people, maybe short term to give them some get them back on track, particularly the ones that have type 2 diabetes. But generally speaking, those are the things that I look for: the thyroid function, obviously, the blood pressure. A big indicator of apnea will probably be that RBCs, hemoglobin hematocrit elevation. That or, testosterone use. Some people, whether it's HRT, whether they're a competitor using performance-enhancing drugs, obviously blood pressure is going to be affected by that. And so we want to reduce the amount, change the type, get away from the orals, start microdosing. A lot of interventions we can use to help them maybe introduce a little bit of tadalafil. A low-dose 5-milligram tadalafil does a great job of increasing nitrous oxide, which helps with vasodilation. Some of my heavier athletes may experience some degree of BPH, benign prostatic hyperplasia. Tadalafil helps with that as well. And then we're on to cholesterol, I think. Well, we're probably on to kidney and liver enzymes next, after blood pressure, in terms of things that are the most critical. And a lot of times people get a high AST, ALT, or even a high creatinine because they trained the day before the blood test. And it's just reading, the myoglobin, the breakdown of muscle tissue in the bloodstream, not necessarily the enzymes from the kidney itself or the livers themselves. So we try to educate them on that, try and get them to take 3 days off before the blood test and hydrate well to keep those numbers good. But if those do come elevated, we need to pay attention to that. Fatty liver isn't always recognized in blood tests. AST, ALT doesn't always show elevated with fatty liver. And so we want to look maybe at the triglycerides. It's kind of a leading indicator of potential fatty liver. And fasted insulin is another one that is a leading indicator. Fasted glucose and HA1C are lagging indicators. Those can stay in the normal range for damn near a decade before.
I think we left off on AST, ALT, and fatty liver.
Yes, sir. For sure.
For blood tests.
I was actually having Joe Google some of that stuff. He didn't know what it was.
Yeah, I'm a little bit small on my like nutrition biochem. It's been about a decade. Like I'm there, but I'm not where you guys are.
Well, and I am cautious to say I'm not a doctor. We do refer people to medical professionals. And my co-author Damon McCune is a RDN, PhD in exercise phys. He's had some, obviously, a lot of clinical practice in nutrition for these kinds of things. And so we don't tell people to go on or off of medications. We suggest that they work with closely with their doctor. We do try and help them get off medications with the help, with the supervision of their doctor, particularly blood pressure medications. Antacids is another one that it just wreaks havoc on people's digestion. So we work hard to try and remedy things like acid reflux and GERD and blood sugars. We really try and control diabetes and insulin. So I guess that kind of takes us down to hormones, testosterone levels. Obviously, thyroid function are going to be very important.
Dan, I got a question for you right on this topic. And you just said it and it hit me. How do you manage, right? And again, we've all been there as a strength coach, with a CSCS or, even Matt with an RD, we're not MDs or, some version of doctor, before our name. So how do you suggest, or how have you best found? And again, I think you're going to answer what you just said in terms of you refer people, but you have a lot of knowledge and you have a lot of tools to help people, but at the end of the day, you're not the doctor. And there's that stigma that you can't know anything. You're not a doctor. So how do you work around that with everything you do, from the nutrition, from the training? I mean, I've had doctors tell me, oh yeah, no, they can Olympic lift, but they can't deadlift. I've had nutritionists tell me, oh, a Pop-Tart's fine. And again, in the context of, having a healthy breakfast. And it was like, yeah, they can just eat Pop-Tarts. That's fine. And I was like,
right.
Okay. Like, I get it, but no. So how do you deal with that kind of stuff? Because I know those things come up.
Yeah. I mean, obviously respectfully, particularly with an MD, I think the blood tests are really the measure if someone or just a blood pressure measurement in when you're trying to reduce blood pressure, just getting a baseline from your doctor. A doctor is obligated by standard of practice to prescribe blood pressure medication or statins or medications that if you come in with high blood pressure or high cholesterol. Otherwise, they have some liability. If you walk out the door and die, plus they're with you for 10 minutes and they can't hold your hand. And at the end of the day, I'm sure that they recommend you lose some weight, start exercising and eat a better diet. But like I said earlier, clinicians are not the most successful practitioners of diet compliance and training long-term. They just don't interact with the client often enough. So what I like to do is get that baseline measurement. Maybe they're on blood pressure medications. I suggest they implement the high blood pressure quick fix kit, get a home testing kit, blood pressure cuff. And as soon as that thing starts to drop, go in and see the doctor again. They can verify that their blood pressure is lowered, and then they'll start to titrate down or remove one of the blood pressure medications under supervision. We often see that happen. So if it's a situation where the doctor is trying to make recommendations in terms of training, it's kind of out of their wheelhouse. If you're an exercise science PhD like Damon is or a CSCS, then I won't tell them how to practice medicine, and they probably shouldn't recommend, how a client should train in terms of weightlifting, in so much as it doesn't affect their medical condition. So that's not too terribly difficult to manage. But to me, it's a collaboration. The more attention that the individual gets, the better. At least they're paying attention to it. And sometimes they even want to prove their doctor wrong. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a good motivation. I got to get them doing something somehow.
True. So I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit, kind of follow the same idea. Everything we've been talking about, right, is it's consistency, it's time, it's building a relationship. It's, whether that's you as a coach building the relationship with your potential clients or having a client and taking the consistency and training. So now you're that coach. You've invested all this time in learning, all this time in building relationships. How do you balance everything else in your life, and how have you gone about, a wife, kids, life, all the other things when, I'm sure for a guy like you, every single weekend someone wants you at a seminar, every single weekend you could be at a competition, every single weekend, every single day you could be in the gym for 10 hours. How do you find, and what's your advice to someone to have some kind of balance?
Yeah, initially you're going to take every bit of business that comes your way. And then as time goes on, you'll be able to fill the hours that you want to work with enough business to be able to live off of that. And then you might, the person who wants to come in and train at 4 a.m., that's no longer consistent with what you've decided is going to be your lifestyle. Then you hand that off to another trainer. You refer out those people that, and maybe participate in some way. Communicate with them on an ongoing basis. A lot of good gym owners will get a percentage of their trainer's total gross revenue for the month in order for them to train there, but they'll also bring them clients. And so a good gym owner probably shouldn't be training people all day, every day. They're probably better off helping 5 or 6 trainers underneath them get clients. For me personally, it's just a matter of setting a schedule. At some point, you're just going to have to say, I'm going to work these days, and I'm not going to work these hours. Even with working from home, you could get up and start just as soon as you wake up, and you could work until the wee hours of the night. It's hard now with the kids home. You don't get as much done, but what I would normally do is take them to school, and that would give you 6 solid hours between before you had to pick them back up, where you just try and get as much as you possibly could get done in a day. A lot of folks will have their phone set up so they get a reminder every single time a text or a DM or a message or something, comes in, or a WhatsApp if it's an international client. That can be pretty annoying. You might want to turn off notifications and then set up a block of time that you're actually going to work where you go in and you clean out all of your emails and texts and DMs and WhatsApps and the like, and set times that you're available and let your clients do their weekly check-ins according to your schedule, and make, you know, rare accommodations for those people who just can't fit your schedule. And that becomes important. Having a balance is huge.
What you said was so important too, the ability to sit down and block out everything else, put the phone down, put everything down and be able to do your work for a short period of time. That was awesome. Real quick, because you use it many times, when you say big rocks, for any of our people on here that don't know what that is, what do you mean when you say big rocks?
I set things up in terms of order of importance. I have a hierarchy, you know, and I want people to pay attention to those. Like, just like sleep is the single most important thing. That's the one that people neglect the most. And again, nobody can fix that for you. If you lay down in bed with your phone in your hand and surf the internet for 2 hours, you know, I can't help you with that. That's the problem. It's the easiest thing to fix and it's free, but people just don't assign enough importance to it. That a lot of what I do with clients, including some of the, you know, these world-class athletes, the Hafþór Bjørnsons and Brian Shaws of the world, they had sleep apnea and did not have a CPAP. It's just mind-boggling. They didn't, obviously, and even Lane Johnson of the Philadelphia Eagles, who was tested by Dr. Sandra Godick at the Heat Institute for his sweat rate, had a level 5 sweater, sweating out 5 grams of sodium an hour, did not have a hydration protocol. And she offers one. He just, you know, these guys are busy and they're focused on their thing. And so I asked him, I said, did you get a test from Dr. Godick? Because I knew she worked with the Eagles. And he goes, I don't know. Well, let's ask. I don't remember, you know. And do you have a CPAP? Yeah. Are you wearing it? No, not really. It's uncomfortable, blah, blah, blah. So that's the first thing I did with Lane is I flew out and I reprogrammed his CPAP and got him a new mask so he would wear it. He was weighing about 312 pounds when I started working with him. And he needed to be in the 320s. He has a hard time gaining weight. He's one of those guys that like myself, had a difficult time holding on to mass. And he was having a hard time eating enough food. And his blood pressure, his systolic blood pressure was 153. And we got him up to now 333 pounds. It put almost 20 pounds on him, or a little more. And his systolic blood pressure at last measurement was 123. Awesome. And he's having a lot easier time holding on to weight because we gave him foods that were easier to digest. You know, I talk ad nauseum about the benefits of a monster mash, and because it's just so easy to eat more of it and digest it faster and eat again sooner. It's just a strategy. You know, it's not magic. It's just that we're not filling you full of foods that are really hard to digest and giving you gas and bloating. It's really that simple. So those to me are the big rocks. It's managing you know, the things that will give you the biggest return on your investment. What's the most important intervention I can start with? I mentioned thyroid function. People don't realize that in terms of cholesterol either. They go to the doctor and they have elevated cholesterol and the doctor's, well, you might need a statin. Thyroid function, it has a much more significant impact on elevated cholesterol than just about any other intervention that you could, you know, even if it's like reducing saturated fats or eating more, you know, monounsaturates or taking fish oil. You get all these little recommendations that have very little, they don't move the needle very much. This whole idea, I'm going to take some fish oil. Yeah, not really, you know, in comparison to actually losing a little bit of body fat or exercising a little more, lowering your blood sugars, you know, fixing your thyroid function. Everybody wants to take something, kind of puts me back to that thing I said earlier, things that are done to you or for you are rarely as effective as things you could do for yourself. And pills, powders, and potions go in that list of things that are done to you or for you. It's a kind of a lazy man's way of supplementing themselves out of you know, not doing the things that require them to actually participate, such as the sleeping better and taking walks after meals and not eating like an asshole.
that's perfect. And setting up the big rocks so you can then pour the sand and then put the little pebbles and kind of find those little things like you were talking about where you have the most important things and then fill in your jar with most important. That's awesome. And kind of goes along with that. My next question that we ask everybody is, you know, what was your best investment for you and your business that was under $1,000? And what do you think, and why was it the best investment? Like, what's something somebody could get right now and was the best investment either for you or for your business, however you want to take that?
Wow. I'm trying to think.
Joe, this might be the first one he doesn't knock out of the park right away. I'm kind of proud.
I know. He had to think for more than a second. Stan, you've just been killing him. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to think because it seems like most of the easy stuff is free. By the time you actually have to invest in something to get a return on it, I couldn't even tell you anything I've spent money on that I think has given me huge value.
All right, how about the free thing you got? How about that? What's the thing that has made your – let's do the business. What has made your business, you know, grow to the exponential amount that it has, where you have multiple businesses and multiple layers and you're working at so many different facets? Like, what has allowed you to do that? Has it been a piece of technology or just something you've learned?
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head there. It's going to be the iPhone. I mean, you have to, that thing allows me to work from anywhere 24/7 whenever I need to. I could take my kids to soccer practice and knock out, you know, some work while they're playing. Especially being on social media, the iPhone 11, the camera on it is ridiculous. And then being able to just take it right from your phone and drop it onto iMovie and make a little clip and throw it onto social media. It's dramatic. The kind of, people always ask me how to build a social media following. And they're like, well, you know, I'm not a Mark Bell or I'm not a, you know, I'm not Stan Efferding. Look, all they want is good information, but that you have to be consistent about it. The big thing that Mark did is he just put out more content than anyone on the planet. You know, every single day. If you're not posting every day, you're not very serious. And I guess you could just look to Gary Vee's site to get all the tidbits on that. Yeah, he's just an endless resource of marketing, and he does it in a great way. So that's probably the biggest thing. It's just taking little shots, everything that you do every day, and then put together a little video, post it on social media. Even your clients that you're training, you know, get them to post it on their site. You can pretty quickly build up a little referral base, just from having people who can easily reference. Fewer people will look at your website. More people will look at your Instagram and see what, you know, it's actively going on every day. I remember going to a seminar with Brett Contreras because he's built a huge following. Mm-hmm. And he talked about the fact sometimes he'll spend an hour or more on one post digging into the, you know, because his are really informative. There's others that do that as well. Alan Aragon's pretty good at that. They give you a lot of information in a post. So spend a little time. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. You want to be consistent, but spend a little time on it. I think the iPhone's been probably one of the best things in terms of social media, my ability to to do things on Facebook, Instagram, and that kind of thing. I shoot all my own videos. I shoot everything on iPhone. My whole trip. My 60 cities in 60 days tour, the whole thing was documented. I have a little $10 selfie stick that has a little tripod on the bottom, and it's probably one of the best little gadgets that I have. I go to the gym, I just set it up, and I do my workouts, and I videotape someone else, and get yourself out there. And if you want to be in this business, you want to make sure that you and your clients, they can see what you're doing. And, I post before and after pictures are huge. This goes back to Bill Phillips' Body for Life, probably one of the best-selling, training books in history. It was all built on 30-day transformations, before and after pictures. Everybody still wants to see those. That's if you're going to talk about the most important thing you can do for marketing is throw before and after pictures. Get people to give you testimonials. I post them as often as I can without offending anybody. And people will scroll through and they start to see, oh, you helped so-and-so with his blood pressure, so-and-so with their blood sugar, so-and-so lost 20 pounds, so-and-so competed in this, that, and the other. And a lot of these are ordinary folks. These aren't, you know, the big guys. So that'd be really helpful.
We've been talking about things people can do and people look to you, right? That's part of the reason why we came to you is we know people look to you, you have great advice. You've been knocking these questions out of the park, but where does Stan Efferding go? Who do you sharpen your sword with? Is it you have one specific, you know, mentor or someone you talk to in each, you know, is it a business person, a weightlifting person, or do you have a group of people and you guys all get together and kind of throw stuff on the wall? How does Stan Efferding continue to sharpen his sword?
Well, I've always been a voracious reader. Last year I read the NSCA manual and took my CSCS. I studied exercise science in the late 80s. And I already have a successful business. I didn't need to do that. But the more I feel it's, I have an obligation to myself and to my clients to stay current and to, you know, be constantly out seeking new information. I attended the Barbell Medicine Seminar. Those are smart folks, Austin Baraki and Jordan Fagenbaum. I spent, you know, two full days. It was two 10-hour days over there. Obviously, the starting strength information, I read his manual, a lot of good physics and physiology in there, or kinesiology in there, and attended his seminar. I subscribe to Mass Research Review and read everything they put out and watch every video that Greg Knuckles and Eric Trexler produces. Those people they're brilliant, absolutely genius. I subscribe to Alan Aragon's review, his monthly newsletter he's been putting out for something like 10 years. It's very great information. I bought and read RP Strengths. They're competitors of mine, but I read all their stuff. Their manual, Renaissance Periodization with Mike Israetel's stuff. And he's got a lot of free content on there as well. Lane Norton, I bought both of his books, his pre-contest manual and his Fat Loss Forever, and read both of those. The ISSN, International Society of Sports Nutrition, they have a website, the Journal of the International Society of Sports Nutrition, where they have position papers on just about everything relevant to nutrition, sports nutrition in particular, and training as well. Dr. Jose Antonio is the president of that group. He's an excellent resource. I mentioned Brett Contreras. There's a host of other good resources on the internet. I think I hit the big ones. Brad Schoenfeld, read his book. He's probably one of the most prolific researchers studying hypertrophy and strength training and doing the actual research on muscle. I don't know if I'm forgetting any, but I read for probably at least 2 or 3 hours a day, trying to make sure that, you know, and watch videos of people that I think are not popular necessarily, but I think certainly academically and, you know, credentialed and well-respected in the industry. There are a lot of popular people I do avoid because they tend to put out some pretty biased information or become zealots about their own thing. Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot. I've made some changes over the years. I think the most important things are pretty consistent. I've written articles, you know, over a decade ago that are pretty consistent with the same kinds of things I recommend today. But there's nuances. There's little stuff that changes, you know. So I try and stay current. Obviously, Dr. Sandra Godick's stuff from the Heat Institute for Hydration. She's extraordinary. Probably one of the best. She's a PhD in thermoregulation and hydration, which I think is a huge component of training and performance. But I think I hit the big ones. Dr. Nadolsky's good with lipidology. Dr. Peter Attia is really interesting to listen to. Very smart. And he's made some mistakes over the years, admittedly, and he talks about those. He was the guy that pissed on keto sticks every day for 3 years on Instagram and finally said, hey, I'm done with this. I'm going to eat carbs. They're all eating carbs. Mark Bell, the war on carbs, he's eating carbs. Paul Saladino, the carnivore MD, he's eating carbs. These are all friends of mine whose podcasts I've been on. Mike Mutzel from High Intensity Health, another smart guy with a master's in nutrition, biochemistry, I think. He eats carbs now. They do, you know, intermittent fasting, keto here and there, but they know what it takes to perform. And performance is a huge part of what I promote, and also compliance and long-term. I just feel like people kind of settle into a more even macronutrient balance. And so I don't really push any position. Getting adequate protein is probably the big thing. And that's Dr. Jose Antonio, the International Society of Sports Nutrition. He did a seminar at the NSCA, and I don't know if you guys saw this one at the NSCA conference, but it was supposed to be about nutrition for kids. And it was packed. It was probably the busiest seminar I was in. It was standing room only. Everybody was all along the walls and in the back. And he got up there and he said, get your kids a gram of protein per pound of body weight and forget the rest. And everybody in the room was just standing there dumbfounded. They thought it was going to be an hour on nutrition for kids. And then he went on to talk about some protein overfeeding studies and blah, blah, blah. But that was it. It literally took him 30 seconds to tell parents how to feed their kids. And this is a father of two college-age sports athletes. He's get them a gram of protein for a pound of body weight, you know,
yeah.
And then check out. Don't worry about
I remember back when creatine was the biggest deal in the world. He got up on stage and somebody asked him, like in a panel or something, they said, would you give your kids creatine? He goes, I do every morning in their yogurt. I actually mix it in. And he was giving his two daughters, he was giving them like 1 or 2 grams of creatine every morning with their yogurt. Obviously not a large dose, like a full meal, but he was given just a small amount of creatine every morning. The yogurt would mix it up. They never knew they were eating it all the time. So absolutely. That's hilarious.
We overcomplicate it. We really do.
100%. Every damn time.
And we try and give ourselves credit for how much we suffer. It's totally unnecessary. And coming from a guy who punished himself for decades, you know, I'm like, yeah, a lot of that probably wasn't very beneficial.
One of the things, it's been an undercurrent in kind of everything you've said, is everything's just a tool. Go into that a little bit more. How'd you get that philosophy? Where, I mean, you've talked about it and you've mentioned it to some degree from training, from nutrition, from business, from everything. It's everything you learn is a tool. You're not absolutely one way. You're not just one thing. You know, everything's a sledgehammer. How did you get to that? And how do you use that mindset in everything you do?
Because it's never any one thing. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. When you can responsibly manage, a whole group of things like sleep and hydration, nutrition, exercise, and all those things together, then the synergy is what gives you the performance. And then the consistency long-term, because I struggled as a skinny kid, 140 pounds in college when I was 18 years old. I hit plateau after plateau after plateau. And if you double down super hard on your training, which I've done many times, you know, start killing yourself for 2 hours a day, there's no upside to that long-term. You have to be really consistent and patient and persistent. And that's where my little checklist comes into hand, because if you're managing all those variables and then you do it consistently over time, there's really no choice but for your body. There will be brief reset periods where your body says, okay, you brought me to a new place, whether it's a weight gain or a weight loss, and it might plateau you a little bit while it's trying to reset itself with that new weight. But if you're persistent and you can push through that plateau and get past that set point, then you can keep progressing. I mean, ultimately, it's just a matter of how long are you willing to be disciplined and consistent. And I found that if I make all of those things part of a normal lifestyle, then it's much easier to be consistent. That's why I don't do the extreme diets or the 4 a.m. cardio. I don't do the egg whites and tilapia and broccoli diets for any of my competitors, because when they're done with the competition, I don't want them to rebound to where they were. I want it to be sustainable, that they can stay within, you know, a reasonable range of competition shape, or maintain their weight loss if they're a soccer mom long term with a diet plan that's sensible. That includes a little red meat and a whole egg and, you know, some fruit and a little bit of carbs here and there. I don't completely eliminate any macros, and I don't avoid the kinds of foods that people would typically eat anyhow. And they find that, hey, this is a lifestyle that's sustainable. I can do this. I don't have to, it's not a big sacrifice, and I'm not going to rebound, which is generally what happens.
100%. You see that all the time. Classically, people are big time, you know, figure coaches or competitive coaches. And all of a sudden you'll see that same person who looked amazing on stage with all those great Instagram pictures. 3 months later, they just look absolutely terrible. So that's great advice for anyone out there who wants to get into that niche of working with competitive bodybuilders, figure, bikini, whatever, that you should be sustainable. And what are you doing after? Are you coaching them after? Is that something you are doing with them, that's something you need to think about too as you start to write that business, if that's part of your plan, for sure.
100%. And what did you do to them before that might subject them to that kind of rebound? If you are crashing their thyroid function, and if you're depleting them of biotin and their hair starts falling out, and then ultimately if you're restricting sodium and then they end up with this massive edema, generally if you're not eating red meat, women generally will start to get anemia, amenorrhea, cessation of the menstrual period, osteoporosis, because usually, oh, don't eat dairy. Dairy's bad for you. You know, it's complete horseshit. And then next thing you know, you got the female triad, and then depression. And now they're at the doctor getting antidepressants, along with, those injections for D, vitamin D and iron and glutathione and whatever else. I think that's that little bag of injectables is their new, weekly plan. It's disgraceful. It's painful to watch. So I certainly don't do it. I definitely talk a lot about it because it used to be this. I've been training women for competition since the late 80s. I've seen this over and over and over again ad nauseum. And it used to be kind of isolated to that industry. The bikini girls suffered all those problems. Well, over the last 6 or 7 years, that industry has exploded. Because bikini and figure didn't even exist 8 years ago.
Right.
And now they've got, wellness, and it's exploded. The problem with that is now the general population, the soccer moms out there, see these bikini girls on stage in the best shape of their life and try and follow their diet.
Yeah.
And their diet is egg whites, tilapia, and broccoli. And then they start suffering all of those side effects without any of the benefits of, taking Anavar to retain their muscle, or thyroid to hold on to their, thyroid pills to hold on to the thyroid function, or they're exhausted, but they're not taking clenbuterol and dosing a whole bunch of thermogenics. So they're getting all the bad and all the problems with none of the benefits.
Yeah. No, you're hitting it right on the head. Joe, what is, you got anything else for him, sir?
No, from my end, I mean, obviously, Stan, we had our little list of stuff on our little Word document. I'm sure you heard me clicking that we were just trying to make sure we cover our big rocks and all the questions we want to make sure we get in. We covered a little bit of everything. I mean, in hell, Stan, every question we asked you, you answered about 14 more questions or had 10 great points while you were hammering away. So,
I guess I do have one more for you, Stan, if you don't mind.
Shoot.
My big question to you is, if you were us, who would be the main people you'd want to put on this, right? Who would you want to hear? I know you have such a massive brain trust of people that you listed off, and your list was amazing, and it matched up with a lot of the people already on my list. But if you had to get, the next three people to put on this show, who would you recommend?
It'd be that list I gave you. I mean, anytime you can talk to Brad Schoenfeld or Alan Aragon or Brett Contreras or Greg Knuckles or Lane Norton or Mike Israetel, I like Ben Bickman. He's a big insulin guy. Tends to be a bit of a keto guy, but you start identifying these people by their biases, and I have my own that I'm fighting through now. I think seed oils are poison. I'm having a harder and harder time defending that, because there's some pretty good nutritionists out there that are arguing the contrary. So the war will wage on. I would like to hear what depending on the audience, what some of the actual strength and conditioning coaches that are in the trenches are doing, the guys, that are working with the teams on a full-time basis, if they're available. They don't tend to be as public as the rest of us because they have a job. So they don't have to go out and pimp their services on social media because they're actually employed. But I like to hear what's going on. The people who are actually training, the NFL people and the NBA people. And I found some of those guys, some of those athletes don't necessarily do everything that the coaches, the strength coaches wish that they would. And, I've talked a little bit about that here. I always thought to myself, when someone came to me that was a big time athlete, whether it was a, NFL or NBA or MLB or these World's Strongest Men guys, I always thought, what can I do to help these guys? These guys are already And then just 5 or 6 questions later, you realize there's a whole ton of low-hanging fruit out there that these guys are probably successful in spite of themselves. You know, genetics reign supreme. And a lot of these people I'm finding have that definite significant advantage over the rest of us. Yes. But beyond that, they're doing a whole lot of shit wrong that makes, you know, makes me look like some genius that I'm not. I'm not some guru. I'm like their mom wagging my finger. Get a CPAP, you know, start taking some salt before your training session. And it has, you know, eat a little more potassium so your blood pressure doesn't skyrocket. You know, quit stuffing yourself full of shit that makes you fart all the time. And they're like, wow, this is amazing. You know, my blood pressure went down. My water retention subsided. My wife's so happy I'm not blowing it up all over the house all the time. And I'm like, perceive me to be some sort of genius. And it's like, no, you know, a fifth grader could have told you that, but you're just not doing it. You know, so I almost feel bad sometimes that I charge for this information, but people just aren't doing it.
So something you mentioned earlier, it made me think of that. I didn't bring it up at the time. So my mentor and one of Matt's mentors, the late Jerry Martin, he was UConn strength conditioning 20 yeah. years, you know, the whole bit. He was a legend and a great human. But yeah. I remember having a conversation with him about guys when they finished playing. So strength coach for them for 4, maybe 5 years if they redshirt football. Every day he's in there harping on them, eat breakfast, do this, workout, blah, blah, blah. You know, having to be mother, father, sister, brother, cousin, uncle to them. And then they want to get ready for the league. And they're no longer as athletes. And he's like, okay, you know, it's like $3,000. And the guy like, what do you mean? He's like, well, that's how much you should have been paying me the last 5 years. But, you know, now that you're actually going to do it, you're going to show up every day. You're going to listen. There's more value. You made a great comment. I forget how you said it. But, you know, if you give something away for free, it has no value. He always used to joke on the flip side. I've been giving it to you for free for 5 years, and now you want it? Bring it back a little bit.
Oh, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. Yep. A lot of those kids, they take it for granted. I've worked with a lot of them. They think everything's free, you know.
No, hey, I spent most of my career, at least from generally speaking, in the collegiate athletic space. So, you know, that was the joke was I had a salary and a job no matter who showed up in the door, and I never had to recruit anyone to show up in the door. They just showed up. And then it was all the problems dealing with that. You know, but there's goods and bads of it. But you make a great point. Those guys in that industry, they're not chasing clients. They are, but they're not. They're chasing buy-in in just a totally different way, mainly because they're, you know, it's like forced family. They have to be with each other. You have no choice.
Yeah, and the power of youth, I think that people, when they start to get into their 30s or, God forbid, their 40s and above, or like me, now in my 50s, you can't get away with that. You can't get away with, you know, going out every Friday night. You just can't. Because it'll knock you dead for 2 full days, you know. People always talk about the 80-20 rule with diet. And I'm like, try that with sleep. How does that work for you? Just take one night a week and just go on a bender and stay out till 6 a.m. See how that impacts you. And so I'm really not a big fan of the whole 80-20 rule. I'm like, it depends on what that 20 is and how it affects the 80. You know, so as the older you get, the more you're going to have to tighten things up and be more consistent if you want to feel good. But the good news is that, you know, I was damn near 300 pounds when I was 45, you know, at the end of my powerlifting career, and I had fatty liver and high blood pressure and high blood sugar. It's kind of unavoidable when you get that big and heavy and maintain that kind of weight for that long. What's interesting is that back in 1975, when my dad was 45 years old, he was also obese, had high blood pressure, was a smoker, drank pretty regularly beer, and went to the nurse, and she said, look, you need to make some changes. You got 3 kids at home. And he actually went on a trip to Washington, D.C., worked for the government, and spent 7 weeks there, and he lost 40 pounds. Came home a changed man, started jogging. And this was back in 1975. He started jogging, and the neighbors would call my mom and say, is there something wrong? And she's like, why? So I saw your husband running down the street. But there he was at 45 years old, obese, smoking, drinking. Now he's 90. he ran marathons for many years. He paid the price with a couple of hip replacement surgeries, but you know, and I was 45 in the same boat, damn near 300 pounds, fatty liver, you know, high blood pressure, high blood sugars, all of that. And, you know, I turned that around really rapidly. And now here I am at 52. I was just in the doctor's office the other day. My blood pressure was 113 over 64. You know, I stay in extraordinary shape. I get blood tests done regularly. All of my blood markers are great. I don't think it's ever too late for anyone. No matter what your current condition, athlete or not, former athlete or not, smoker, drinker, doesn't matter. I think that what I'm trying to do now is touch as many people as possible. And I'm trying to encourage, which is kind of where we started in terms of personal trainers. One of the focuses of my seminars, my circuit of, I talked to over 4,000 people doing 60 cities in 60 days, all 50 states in Washington, D.C., well, we did 48 states in Washington, D.C., was trying to encourage people to help themselves, of course, but to try and give them the tools that they needed to become better trainers and to help other people just start to lose weight. And you know, of course, now on the heels of COVID, we're finding that these, you know, comorbidities, these obesity and high blood sugars in particular are have a much greater impact on your health outcomes should you be infected. So it's more important now than ever. I think people realize that it's going to be a potentially a life-saving thing for them just to get out and lose a few pounds. And we know that, you know, just a 10% loss of body weight, if you're 300 pounds and you lose 30 pounds, it resolves 95% of fatty liver and can reverse or dramatically lower your HA1C and blood sugars. And put you in a lot better position, your immune system, to be able to handle any kind of flu or COVID or anything like that. So we're not talking about six packs. We're not talking about competing and bodybuilding and powerlifting. We're just talking about, you know, feeling better and improving all of your metabolic health markers. And that can be done in a relatively short period of time without jogging and without starving yourself. And just using, you know, a reasonable lifestyle of high satiety foods, a better sleeping pattern and some 10-minute walks after each meal, we've had extraordinary results. Matter of fact, we have a 100% success ratio with our clients for reducing blood pressure. It's across the board. We've been able to help people. Not all of them can get off medication. Some of them may have you know, done some previous damage, but nonetheless, they can definitely reduce them or come off of some of them and improve those health markers. And I've talked about that in an obesity rant where I said that 95% of health benefits are realized simply from the weight loss itself, irrespective of diet. And that's been tested on the 7-Eleven diet. It's been tested on the McDonald's diet. If you control your calories and, you know, walk daily and you lose 7 to 10% of your total body weight, all of your health markers improve. Blood sugar, blood pressure, cholesterol, all of those things improve.
Nice.
Go, Matt, sorry.
You just say you've absolutely crushed it tonight, man. You just keep hitting home run after home run. And you just keep preaching the same things that I know, at least me personally, I don't want to speak completely for Joe, but I know I could not agree more with 99.99% of what you've been saying. So You've done awesome. And I really appreciate you coming out and spending this time with us. And man, you've just absolutely crushed it all night. I'm sorry, Joe. I didn't mean to step on your toes.
No,
thank you, man.
I'm going the same exact thing. I mean, that's if we're going to wrap this up now, and again, appreciate you taking the time. Yeah. That was the best close because it's the most applicable thing to anybody who's listening. A little bit can go a long way if you do it the right way.
Yeah.
And people need to apply that to whatever facet of their life, not even just their health and their diet, but their ability to, you know, add on to their business, add on to whatever. And it's just such a great parallel to everything we've been talking about. Thank you for wrapping that up for us. We didn't have to do any work.
Yeah, that was
thanks, guys.
That was an easy one. Stan, last thing as we close, you mentioned so many people, you mentioned so many books, so many things. Is there anything else that you want to mention, whether it's your thing or someone else's thing, that we can pass on to anyone who listens, reads, and whatnot? Floor is open.
Yeah, I think that's a good list. All of my stuff is at Stan Efforting. My website's stanefforting.com. My Instagram's at Stan Efforting. My YouTube. The Rhino's Rants. I've got probably 100 hours of free content out there between my seminar in Iceland and my Rhino's Rants and my interviews There's the rants in particular. I spent a lot of time writing them and rehearsing them and researching them to make sure it was quality information condensed down, and so I wasn't boring anybody to death. So there's a lot of good stuff in there, and they're free. I would encourage everybody to go to my YouTube account and look up Rhino's Rants and just start scrolling through them. And I get a lot of feedback from people all over the world that they really, really enjoy those. So I'm grateful for that, and it doesn't cost anything. And then all those references I made to you today, all those people that I mentioned and their articles and their websites and their videos, I included links to those in my Vertical Diet 3.0 ebook. So, you know, people can have a kind of a reference from that. They can use that as kind of a, a starting point to branch off and discover more about, take a deeper dive into the things they have a greater interest in.
Nice. Paul?
That's great, man. I got nothing to add, man. I can't top that.
No. Stan, thank you, sir. Much appreciated. This has been awesome. And then obviously we'll keep you posted as one, as we start doing this with other people. And then two, as we start making something out of this, because obviously it's going to take us a little bit of time to pull it all together into something we can start putting out for people. The last one I got for you is actually, do you familiar with Joe DeSena from Spartan at all? Do you know the name?
I haven't met him, no.
So I'm going to shoot an email out to you and him. Again, having helped you before and throwing some people your way, he's a really good guy. And after really talking in depth with you on stuff, I think the two of you share a ton of common philosophy around nutrition and taking care of yourself and taking the ownership of yourself. And I think you guys would have a really good conversation. He also is doing a ton of good stuff right now with kids and youth, and building them as people through proper health, proper nutrition, proper exercise. So I'll shoot you guys both an email and connect you, because I think you two would have a great conversation.
That's great. And my next book is going to be Vertical Kids next fall. I'm going to put that out. It's going to take a lot of research, but I'm trying to lead by example. I found that people won't listen to me if I'm preaching to them and not actually doing what I say. And I get a lot of advantage out of, people want to be healthy. They want to be, still perform at a decent level as they age. And so I live it. I have, no pain, no health issues. And that's coming from someone who subjected himself to a lot over the years. I've had, chronic tendonitis in my knees and hips, and I've had many lower back injuries and torn muscles. And now I don't have any of that. I'm pain-free, and I'm healthy, and still able to perform at a reasonable level. And so I'm just trying to get out there and encourage people to do things consistently that allow them to have not just a good lifespan, but a health span.
Awesome. Thank you, Stan.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Cool. Pleasure to meet you, Stan, finally.
Awesome, brother. Thank you, man.
All right, have a good night, guys. Hey, everyone, be safe. And until we meet in person one day when all this stuff is over and we can.
Indeed. Thanks, man.
No problem. See you guys.